Star Tide Rising, Cassette 8.
Jillian! McAnee's flukes pounded the water, and her harness whirred. With one metal arm, she pointed up at the wounded dolphin floating in the gravity tank. Crydike was looking back at her. Joshua H. Barb, but you said his cortex was fried, Matt stared. An expression of profound concentration bore down on Crydike's features. He breathed heavily, then gave voice to a desperate cry.
Out! It's not possible, McAnee sighed. His speech centers,
Crydike frowned in effort.
Out! Crydike! Swim! Crydike!
It was trinary baby talk, but with a queer tone to it, and the dark eyes burned with intelligence. Jillian's telepathic sense throbbed.
Out!
He whirled about in the tank and slammed his powerful flukes against the window with a loud boom. He repeated the Anglic word. The falling tone slope was like a phrase in primal.
Out! Help him out! McAnee commanded her assistants. Gently, quickly!
Takata Jim was heading back from his comm screen at high speed, wrath on his face. But he stopped abruptly at the gravity tank and stared at the bright eye of the captain. It was the last straw. He rolled back and forth, as if unable to decide on appropriate body language. Takata Jim turned to Jillian.
What I've done was in what I believe to be the best interest of the ship, crew, and mission. I could make a very good case on Earth.
Jillian shrugged. Let's hope you get the chance. Takata Jim laughed dryly.
Very well. We'll hold the charade ship's council. I'll call it for 1 hour from now. But let me warn you, don't push too far, Dr. Baskin. I have powers still. We must find a compromise. Try to pillory me, and you will divide the ship.
And then I will fight you, he added low. Jillian nodded. She had achieved what she had to. Even if Takata Jim had done the worst things McAnee suspected of him, there was no proof, and it was a matter of compromise or lose the ship to civil war. The first officer had to be offered an out.
I'll remember, Takata Jim. In 1 hour, then, I'll be there.
Takata Jim swirled about to leave, followed by his two loyal security guards. Jillian saw Ignacio Met staring after the dolphin lieutenant.
You lost control, didn't you?
She asked dryly as she swam past him. The geneticist's head jerked.
What, Jillian? What do you mean?
But his face betrayed him. Like many others, Metz tended to overestimate her psychic powers. Now he must be wondering if she had read his mind.
Never mind. Jillian's smile was narrow. Let's go and witness this miracle.
She swam to where McAnee waited anxiously for the emerging Crydike. Metz looked after her uncertainly before following. Chapter 51 Thomas Orley. With trembling hands, he pulled vines away from the cave entrance. He crept out of his shelter and blinked at the hazy morning. A thick layer of low clouds had gathered. There were no alien ships yet, and that was just as well. He had feared they would arrive while he was helpless, struggling against the effects of the psi bomb. It hadn't been fun. In the first few minutes, the psychic blasts had beaten away at his hypnotic defenses, cresting over them and drenching his brain in alien howling. For 2 hours, it had felt like eternity, he had wrestled with crazy images, pulsing, nerve-evoked lights and sounds, Tom still shook with reaction.
I sure hope there are still feminine out there, and that they fall for it. It had better have been worth it.
According to Jillian, the NIST machine had been confident it had found the right codes in the library taken from the Fenonin wreck. If there were still Fenonin in the system, they should try to answer. The bomb must have been detectable for millions of miles in all directions.
He dragged a handful of muck out of the gap in the weeds and flung it aside. Scummy seawater welled up almost to the surface of the hole. Another gap probably lay only a few meters beyond the next hummock. The weedscape flexed and breathed incessantly, but Tom wanted a water entrance near at hand. He scooped away the slime as best he could, then wiped his hands and settled down to scan the sky from his shelter. On his lap, he arranged his remaining psi bombs. Fortunately, these wouldn't pack the wallop of the Fenonin distress call. They were simply pre-recorded message casts, designed to carry a brief code a few thousand kilometers. He had only recovered three of the message globes from the glider wreck, though he could only broadcast a narrow range of facts. Depending on which bomb he set off, Jillian and Krydike would know what kind of aliens had come to investigate the distress call. Of course, something might happen that didn't fit into any of the scenarios they had discussed. Then he would have to decide whether to broadcast an ambiguous message, or do nothing and wait. Maybe it would have been better to bring a radio, but a warship in the vicinity could pinpoint a transmission instantly and blast his position before he spoke a few words. A message bomb could do its work in a second or so, and would be much harder to locate. Tom thought about Streaker. Everything desirable was there. Food, sleep, hot showers, his woman. He smiled at the way the priorities had spilled out. Ah, well, Jill would understand. Streaker might have to abandon him if his experiment led to a brief chance to blast away from Kithrop. It would not be a worthless way to die. He wasn't afraid of dying, only of having not done all he could, and not properly spitting in the eye of death when it came for him. That final gesture was important. Another image came to him, far more unpleasant. Streaker already captured, the space battle already over, all of his efforts useless. Tom shuddered. It was better to imagine a sacrifice being for something.
A stiff breeze kept the clouds moving. They merged and separated in thick, wet drifts. Tom shaded his eyes against the glare to the east. About a radian south of the haze-shrouded morning sun, he thought he saw a motion in the sky. He huddled deeper into his makeshift cave. Out of one of the eastern cloud drifts, a dark object slowly descended. Swirling vapor momentarily obscured its shape and size as it hung high above the sea of weeds. A faint drumming sound reached Tom. He squinted from his hiding place, wishing for his lost binoculars. Then the mists parted briefly, and he saw the hovering spaceship clearly. It looked like some monstrous dragonfly, sharply tapered and wickedly dangerous. Few races delved so deeply into the library for weird designs as did the idiosyncratic, ruthless Tandu. Wild protrusions extended from the narrow hull in all directions, a Tandu hallmark. At one end, however, a blunt, wedge-shaped appendage clashed with the overall impression of careless, cruel delicacy. It didn't seem to fit into the overall design. Before I could get a better view, the clouds came together, concealing the floating cruiser from sight. The faint hum of powerful engines grew slowly louder, however. Tom scratched an itchy 5-day growth of beard. The Tandu were bad news. If they were the only ones to show themselves, he would have to set off message bomb number 3, tell Streaker to lock up and get ready for a death fight. This was an enemy with whom mankind had never been able to negotiate.